And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today, 941-877-1552. Or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Formed in the late 60s by the Shulman Brothers, Gentle Giant is known as the paradigmatic progressive rock band. With an incomparable musicianship, they went as far as no one ever did into unexplored grounds in the progressive music, navigating over dissonant 20th century classical chamber music, medieval vocal music, jazz, and rock. The multi-instrumentation capabilities of the musicians gave such dynamic to their music, which set parameters to a whole coming generation up to those very days. They explored Moogs, Mellotrons, and Fender Rhodes usage with such majesty, not to mention other instruments like oboes, violins, cellos, and horns, among others. The band was able to come across the 70s maintaining an outstanding level on their music, altering their style over the years and keeping the quality as only a few bands were able to do. Among their magnificent discography, all the albums from Acquiring the Taste through Playing the Fool, essential progressive rock releases, with the possible exception of Interview. This portion of the band's career would see a fittingly grand conclusion on the live Playing the Fool album. What more is there to say about these masters of progressive music? Renowned music industry veteran Derek Shulman has achieved success sitting on both sides of the desk. Born in the United Kingdom, his introduction to the music business was as lead vocalist with 60s pop sensation Simon Dupree and the Big Sound. Signed to the Beatles label Parlophone, the group enjoyed TV appearances, top 20 singles, and toured Europe extensively. They even secured a talented keyboard player by the name of Reginald Dwight Elton John towards the later part of their lifespan. In 1970, they changed their name to Gentle Giant, going on to even bigger acclaim, recording a succession of best-selling record albums and touring the world as a major headlining attraction. Following his recording career, Shulman became a prominent record executive, starting as an A&R rep at PolyGram Records, where he rose to the ranks of senior vice president. He signed Bon Jovi, Dan Reed Network, Cinderella, and Kingdom Come, among many others. In 1988, he became president and CEO of Atco Records, where he signed the progressive metal band Dream Theater, as well as Pantera. He also reestablished the careers of AC/DC and Bad Company, both of whom sold multi-platinum albums under his watch. He then went on to become president of Roadrunner Records, overseeing signings like Slipknot and Nickelback. In March 2010, Derek Shulman established a new venture with international music impresario Leonard Pofkovic called 2+ Music and Entertainment. Gentle Giant, three-piece suite is a specially curated selection of songs and compositions from Gentle Giant's first three albums. Giant, Acquiring the Taste, Three Friends, presented in both 5.1 surround sound and stereo. There are 9 tracks from the albums, plus a pre-debut song remixed by Steven Wilson. The choices were determined by the limited availability of multi-track master tapes from the era. Only a few songs from each album are known to exist as multi-tracks, with the rest presumably lost. For fans of Gentle Giant, three-piece suit is a must-have. For fans of great musicianship and progressive rock, this is an incredible insight into the earliest days of the legendary band. Look for the upcoming Gentle Giant three-piece suit release on CD, Blu-ray, and vinyl on September 29th on Soul Food Music. Pre-order links for Amazon and iTunes are linked on https://link.to/GentleGiant_3PSuit. Please welcome singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist for progressive rock legends Gentle Giant and record producer and record executive Derek Shulman to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Derek.
Hi, Ray. That's quite an introduction. I didn't know that I did so much, but thank you for letting me know.
Well, there's more if you want me to keep reading.
No, that's enough. That's all you have to do. That's enough.
Then we wouldn't have
what you're talking about.
Then we wouldn't have an interview. How'd you make that transition from musician to record executive? That's quite impressive.
It was something of a number one, a need to work, and number two, wanting to be involved in the business on a different angle, and having the ability and, I guess, experience of being in charge of the band, if you like, in certain respects, because we were self-managed towards the end, and utilizing my experience on that side to hopefully help artists on the other side, on the dark side, as it were. So it was a transition which, how can I put this, was difficult at first, but ultimately was probably the right one for me.
Now, what are you working on lately? Is there any new and up-and-coming bands that you wanted to talk about, or are you still doing that?
Unfortunately or fortunately, music has been part of my DNA since I was born, and and even though I'm older now, and I won't say what age, I'm certainly involved very much so in a lot of either classic rock bands and or young bands who are upcoming. And, you know, that's the future, and one mustn't discount what the future is, because it's certainly not the older bands who are effectively dying off.
Right,
so, yes,
right.
I'm very much involved. There are a few things, but nothing. I don't think of any particular band that on the new side that I would say that are ready to be told about just yet, but certainly a lot of other bands I work with, as you probably know. Bands like Whitesnake, Toto, Journey, and in my new facility with bands like Rose Tattoo and et cetera, et cetera. All the other big hard rock bands.
Well, we need more people like you. You know, all the pioneers of the music industry, a lot of them either passed away, they don't exist anymore, or there's a lot of corporate rock, you know, that kind of took over. I was in radio back in the late 70s, and I was a top 40 jock back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, a lot of things have changed on the radio. I wrote a book, it's not out yet, about, how radio killed the rock star. It made the rock star, but then it killed it because it wouldn't play any of the current stuff anymore. There's a lot of good stuff, music out there, but they're stuck on their, attracting 14-year-olds now, instead of playing a diverse, array of music. So it's changed a lot.
We were very fortunate in a lot of ways. I mean, we're talking about Gentle Giant, and before that, Simon Dupree, certainly the Gentle Giant, was born in an era where I think everyone was creative and everyone was naive, so there was no sort of like set pattern and or direction where people would go. So as if you were on radio in the sort of before the FM the formats became popular, there'd be DJs playing a whole side or a whole album,
right,
of our music, and or Chester and Tall and or Crimson's and Zappas and God knows what else. So thankfully we had that kind of exposure, and we were lucky enough to play all over the world with different kinds of artists. So it's a different era, and unfortunately not in a positive era.
Yeah, we were very lucky because, the underground, rock stations were, what other station is going to play Captain Beefheart,
No, exactly, yeah, that's true, yeah.
But back then they took a chance and they did, and, they had their audience for it. Now today they just, you don't find that kind of stuff anywhere, which is really a shame because those are the true, great artists. What did you do for AC/DC?
Well, what I do, I had a situation where I was president and CEO of ATCO, and in fact, actually, AC/DC, believe it or not, were on Atlantic, as you probably know, and
right.
Atlantic were prepared to drop them because they weren't selling the amounts of albums that they were supposed to, and the deal was fairly expensive. So, you know, I knew Angus and Malcolm because I knew their big brother, George, who was in the Easy Beats
mm-hmm.
before. And
right.
I said to Atlantic Records that if they didn't want to, if they were going to drop them, I would love to take them on and exchange an artist, if you like, from my repertoire. And in fact, that's what happened. And got together with the guys and introduced them to Bruce Fairburn, Bob Rock, and had them work really hard on their songs. And in fact, it worked and regenerated their career with the album The Razor's Edge, which had Thunderstruck, et cetera, et cetera. So and I was probably the only executive, if you like, that was allowed to be in a studio with the guys. They never liked or enjoyed record men hanging around the studio, but they knew that I was a musician too, so I could understand what they were doing, and I'd done it myself. So in that respect, I was very lucky in that respect too.
Yeah, thank you for all you've done with all these great rock bands. You know, I mean, you know, like I think of the pioneers, you know, like I don't know, Don Kirshner comes to mind, and these guys who, you know, Don Kirshner was very successful bringing up Kansas and,
sure.
and a lot of other bands, and you know, thank you for all the great music
well,
you brought in.
It was my privilege to work with you know, a lot of great musicians and sometimes not so great musicians, but for the most part, you know, good bands that I enjoyed personally as well as professionally. So, you know, in that respect, I'm very lucky to.
Yeah, Brian Johnson's got a house here. I live in Sarasota, Florida. And you know,
the
station's in California, and Brian's here. He's got a house for half the season here. Very big in race cars.
Patrick Mraz also has a house in Sarasota.
Yes, he is. I know Patrick. I think he's in Clearwater. But
he's close to the Clearwater. Well, I work with Patrick actually as well.
He's a great guy. I've had him on the show. I've interviewed him several times. Nice guy.
Right.
Really, really nice guy.
Great guy. Yeah, and a great musician.
Great musician, awesome musician. I think one of my favorite Yes, you know, lineups is when Patrick was there, when they did Relayer. That was my favorite album.
Well, I agree with you, and I work with Patrick to oversee his career as well. So you ask me what I do. I do that as well as the record and whatever that means, company situations as well. So it's a small world.
It is a small world. Here's a crazy question for you. Because I hear it all the time. Does the Illuminati really exist in music, or is that all just a bunch of crap?
What was that, sorry?
The Illuminati. Have you heard about the Illuminati?
No.
Oh, you have not? Okay. You look it up on Google.
Okay. But, I assume it means the... I'm holding a phone right now, so it's not able... But what is it actually...
Well, it's a group that's been around for centuries. People say they've infiltrated the music industry and they have total control over the music industry, and without good intentions. And I was just wondering if you heard of any of that. You know,
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, actually. I think great music and great artists ultimately see through any kind of whatever field. Force there is. I mean, you know, so I think that, you know, and in this day and age, it's a lot harder for great musicians and great artists, who are unique, by the way, to break through. But nevertheless, there's still room for that.
Now, talk about 2+ Music and Entertainment. Is that what your one of your companies right now?
Yeah, it's a company. I kind of an umbrella company which oversees.
Right.
I oversee a company called Frontier Records, which
okay.
we work with artists like, as I said, the kind of classic rock bands. And I also oversee another company out of Australia, which have newer bands, which I'm enjoying. And also, you know, obviously, artists like, as I said, Patrick Mraz, Billy Sherwood right. from Yes, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's a kind of an umbrella thing. I'm a workaholic, so that's good news and bad news for myself and my wife and family, too. So, but I love music, so I'm still involved.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Billy Sherwood. I like Billy too. He's been on the show. He's also a great guy. And
Billy's great. Yeah.
Excellent at what he does. He really, really
Absolutely.
Is good. Yeah. Simon Dupree and the Big Sound, man. I remember. Kites. Wow. That was a great song.
That was a huge song for us.
That was a
top 10 record. Yeah, it was still being played on Radio 1 after all these years.
Now, I heard in an interview once that you weren't really happy with that song, that, it was kind of different than what you guys were heading into, because I guess you were more into R&B, and this kind of came out psychedelic. Is that true?
Yes, it kind of is true, because as a band, when we first started out in the South Coast of England, we were very influenced, as were most of the classic rock bands who came out of the UK during that period, by the American R&B and blues sound. So we were in a similar kind of band, and we played all over England and Europe, and we became, thankfully, very popular without having giant hits. I mean, we had top 40 hits, but we didn't have sort of like the top 5 or top 10 hits. And our manager at the time, found this song and said we would be doing an interpretation of it for the next single. Well, it wasn't the kind of songs that we were doing live, but nevertheless, right. we said, okay, listen, we'll give it a shot, and what the hell. And Dab the Torpedoes, it became a top 10, top 5 hit, and kind of defined us to a degree. And in that respect, we were suddenly a pop band rather than sort of a rock R&B band. And so therefore, our audiences came to see the pop hits rather than a band that would play, great music. It didn't affect our fan base, but what it did was put us into a kind of a pop mold. So that kind of, even though it was good news that we had hit, unfortunately, we were kind of stymied musically because we were placed into a bag, which is a pop bag, rather than being able to expand our own universe naturally.
Yeah. That happened to the Moody Blues, too. They came out as an yep. R&B band, and they came out with Go Now. They were considered a pop band, and then they went into, prog rock, pretty much, the rest of the way.
Well, the same thing happened to a lot of bands who were in that era. I mean, with Steve Howe was I can't remember the damn name. All of these guys were in pop bands, trying to make it, and ultimately broke free from those bands, and in the Idle Race, ELO. Jeff Lynne was in the Idle Race and broke out into ELO. So there, all these artists that made their moves in the early 70s were in bands like Simon Dupree, but were able to break free and do their own thing in the late 60s, early 70s.
Well, what do you think of the Crazy World of Arthur Brown's version of Kites?
I didn't particularly like it, to tell you the truth. Although I loved the Crazy World of Arthur Brown back in the day, I think they were one of the best bands actually that were going during that period. I think when they did Fire, they were live, which we played with a couple of times back in the day. They were superb.
Yeah, I talked to Arthur. He's a nice guy, and of course he doesn't do the Fire headdress thing anymore. There's risk.
neither would I, but that's okay.
Besides Kites, you guys had some really good tunes, man. You had, Give It All Back. Castle in the Sky was another favorite. Castle in the Sky reminded me a little bit of the Moody Blues,
Well, we tended towards, moving in that direction.
Right.
With these songs that we put out, but we were kind of, again, bagged into into the pop thing, so really it was quite kind of constricting. So again, towards the end of the late 60s, we decided to say, look, if the audience was coming to hear the hit, then we can't continue. So we wanted to break the band up, which we did, and we were fortunate in the fact that we had a manager who thought that we did, as we did, that we had enough wherewithal, if you like, to move into a different direction completely and put a new band together. This is myself and my brothers.
Right.
So this is what we did. In fact, we broke Simon to pre-op and took about 6 to 9 months finding new players opening a new chapter in our own musical careers.
I could hear Like the Sun, Like the Fire was starting to sound very much like Gentle Giant.
There's a few songs in the old Simon Dupree repertoire that people wouldn't even know about, which I'm surprised you know about, that were tending towards where we're going to go. But we couldn't put them out as singles because they weren't poppy enough. So therefore, we had
to
break free.
Yeah,
I thought so.
Very good songs. And then you had Elton John at the tail end of that. He was performing, I guess, on a few tracks with you guys.
Yeah, Reg, in fact, was in our band at least towards the end. And in fact, I became good friends with myself and my brother Ray. And in fact, he was one of the very few people we told that we were going to break up the band Simon Dupree and move into something completely different. We were going to do something which we didn't know about, but we wanted to be a band that was, again, we couldn't even explain it, but we wanted to do something completely different. And in fact, Reg said, I'd love to try out for this new different band. And in fact, he played me and my brother Ray songs like Skyline Pigeon and your song. And in fact, when me and Ray sort of listened to them, we thought, great songs, but Reg, it doesn't work for us, so better you don't work with us and move on. And he changed his name to Elton John, thank God for him, and became huge in a year or two. And we were still struggling to get gigs as Gentle Giant, so I'm sure he's very happy that we turned him down.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
he did very, very well.
Now, did you also invite Dudley Moore? Did he play a little bit?
Oh, Dudley played on a couple of songs on our. He was great. He was a good friend, in those days, all the people, to tell you the truth, in the mid to late '60s, a lot of these bands that are classic people and bands and everyone were all knew each other. We all knew each other from the various bands that we were in, and we were rooting for each other all the time. So it was nothing. We were never awed by anyone. It was a different era entirely.
Dudley Moore was a great musician. He really was.
A fantastic pianist.
I loved the way he played piano. He was awesome.
Absolutely.
What about the Moles?
Okay. The Moles was a you've done your research. The Moles we did as a kind of like a test, if you like, and we went into the EMI studios, and this is myself and my brothers, I mean, no one else, and recorded something which was kind of, again, which was tending towards where we wanted to go. And the record came out, and it got a great buzz. I mean, it started selling like crazy because people thought it was the Beatles with a different name.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the studio at the same time as Pink Floyd, because Pink Floyd has just got signed then. And Sid Barrett, who, rest his soul, but you know, became, in certain respects, an interesting character, heard about the song and knew it was doing well and kind of blabbed to the press that no one saw the Beatles, that Simon Dupree and the Big Sound. We saw them record it, so he blew the whistle on us, it stopped short in its tracks of success.
Where can you find the Moles? I mean, is it on YouTube? I haven't looked yet. Is there a way to find mine?
I'm sure it's somewhere. For sure. It's certainly around, hanging around in the archive somewhere.
Do you have copies of the Moles yourself?
I do, but it was an experiment. We thought, well, let's try something completely weird and wacky, but cool, and it was cool. But Sid Barrett unplugged us.
It reminds me of, you know the band XTC?
Of course, very well.
Yeah, they did the Dukes of Stratosphere. They did something very different, and that album, they did a couple of albums, sounded very Beatles-ish also.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, they were kind of Beatles-ish anyway in their experimental ways, but a good band back in the day.
Yeah. Well, I better talk about some Gentle Giant here, or people are going to be mad at me. I'm just as a top 40 guy, I'm really into the 60s, the hits, and I was very intrigued
that history is very important, actually, it really is important because it paved the way for a lot of these classic rock bands or the bands who made it in the 70s and 80s. Whether you know, just as a point of reference, bands like The Idle Race, which became ELO, bands like Episode 6, which became Deep Purple, et cetera, Keith Weston Tomorrow, which became Steve Howe's band, et cetera.
Exactly, yeah. Now, I heard in an interview you didn't like the progressive rock classification imposed on General Giant. Is that true?
Not really. No, I don't think it's quite true. I think it's somewhere where people bag General Giant, but really, we didn't set out to be anything. We set out to be a band that basically wanted to be better musicians for ourselves first, and better musicians for the musicians we recruited for the band. So, really, we didn't know what we were, except that we wanted to do something different and recruited, players who wanted the very same thing.
I think they called it. Didn't they call it classical rock for a while? I remember that.
I don't know. I can't. I really can't remember. But no, we didn't not like it. It was just something. I guess you have to put a tag on because it wasn't 40, if you like, or hard rock or whatever. So whatever it's called, it's called. I don't really mind.
I'm going to read something. I did an interview with Greg Lake. God bless his soul. He was a nice guy, great interview. And when we did the interview, he mentioned this about progressive rock. I'm going to read this. He said, I'm a huge fan of, first of all, I'm a huge fan of progressive rock. And I believe no other rock-related genre has expressed the musical ingenuity and aptness like prog rock. That's for me. But when I had the conversation with Greg Lake, he said, it's a funny thing. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame won't recognize it. They don't want to accept it. It's silly, really, because it's one of the things that nourished rock and roll. You look at a lot of bands now in retrospect, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, they were heavily influenced by ELP. And that was by a lot of American bands. There's nothing wrong with this exchange of cultural nourishment. I think prog rock has been denied its proper place in the history of rock music. Do you agree with that statement from Greg?
To a degree. In fact, I think, prog rock, I mean, again, it's a weird thing to define, but certainly the experimental, if you like, and dissident and or whatever we did and other bands like ELP and the S and everything else did were not, the usual three chord with a vocal line on top. So I think it did influence a lot of different kinds of music going forward. And the interesting thing for me is it's become very, very popular in the hip-hop world, where our music is being sampled by some very, very influential hip-hop artists and enjoyed by those musicians in that world, like Questlove et cetera, and this band called Run the Jewels. They, in fact, had a giant number one hit with a song called Legend Has It, and they've sampled our song too, and it's become a big hit across the board. And that world is kind of taken to it. So, in some ways, Greg is very, very correct in that respect.
Frank Zappa was a fan of General Giant, and I could see why, because, him and his experimental...
They were, I have to say, Frank was a very good, very big influence on General Giant, too. I mean, his music and attitude towards musicianship and music were second to none. I mean, Hot Rats is probably one of my favorite bands albums of all time. So, I mean, they're their musicality and Frank's attitude towards that was quite influential to Jethro Tull, actually.
Let's talk about the album that is coming out, Three-Piece Suit, which is a compositions from Gentle Giant's first three albums, Giant, Acquiring the Taste, and Three Friends. I listened to it. It's an awesome mix of music from, you know, a little bit of, you know, from Giant, awesome tracks. You got Giant, Nothing at All from Giant. Why Not, a rocker, sounds a little bit, you know, it's funny. I love Why Not because your voice sounds a little bit like Mike Harrison from Spooky Tooth on that track. I was also a big Spooky Tooth fan. But
they were great, yeah.
Also great. Very, very good album. I'm really looking forward for I've got it already, but people are going to be excited with the release of that album. It's coming out September 29th, I think is the official date for that.
Release date, yep.
Yep. Talk a little bit about that. It's available in different formats.
Yes, it's available in Blu-ray, which has, you know, fantastic surround sound, 5.1 surround sound, I think very, very interesting graphic and animation for the songs. It's available on just a CD only. The DVD and Blu-ray also comes in flat. We actually produce the flat transfers of all three albums, as well as the instrumentals. As well as the songs themselves, the album itself, the box set, should I say, contains only a few songs of each album because mm-hmm. we were looking for the multis of these albums, and unfortunately, these are the only ones that survived the times when those albums were stored. So we looked at the vaults, and we could only find these three, but unfortunately. We have the multis of the rest of the albums. But Steve Wilson, who's a big fan of ours, said I'd love to remix those. And Steve is a fantastic musician on his own right. And so we said, let's go and touch them up and do what you have to do. And Steven was very respectful of what the original music was and just, you know, touched various little bits and pieces up. And we're putting this out as a box set, as a Blu-ray, as I said, as a CD only, and as a vinyl compilation also. So it's the best of the first three albums, but it's only cut several tracks off each because we can only find the multi-tracks of these albums in the vault. Apparently, they've been destroyed from God knows where. I guess a phonograph at the time didn't think it was worthwhile to keep, so... They'd either, you know, put them to other people's use to record over or trash them. I don't know. But anyway, I hope that people enjoy this box set. I do. I think it's very good for us.
Well, it's awesome. It's a tremendous array of music from Gentle Giant. Am I saying, is it Pantagruel's Nativity? Is that how you say it?
Yep, Pantagruel's. Yep,
Pantagruel's Nativity.
That's an interesting song. Yep.
Yeah, that's from Acquiring the Taste. Yep. Awesome track. Right. What's the origin behind that track?
Well, the track itself was on Acquiring the Taste, which is the second album, and lyrically it was influenced by Rabelais, who is the Middle Ages French. Kind of a body writer who wrote in traditional French about giants and weird wonderful things, and so that was the birth of Pantagruel, which is my brother Phil was in the band and he was very much influenced by, you know, interesting literature as we all were. I mean, we were all kind of fairly well read and mm-hmm. and had musical knowledge, if you like, as well, which was we were all trained and read music, so we tried to utilize that our talents in the ways that were available to us then.
And that's unusual because a lot of these guys, a lot of these people that I talk to, music legends that are awesome, incredible, they're not musically trained, which is incredible. They just play by ear, you know. So
well, we do as well. I mean, we certainly did do that too, especially on stage.
Right.
But you know, we were lucky in the fact that we were recruited Kerry Benear, our keyboard player,
right,
who had come out of Royal Academy of Music with a degree in composition. So we had him out as a very important factor in our music and compositions, as well as my brother Ray, who was a classically trained violinist. And you know, we were all read and but again, this was a part of our, you know, our heritage as well, I guess.
Well, what is it like working with your brothers? Because that could be. I've got an older brother, and you know, it's funny. I talked to Dave Davies, you know, the Kinks, and we had good conversations because it's, you know, our older brothers who give us issues every once in a while. What was it like working with your brothers?
With Ray, it still is always great. With my brother Phil, it was torture. listen, dude, you have siblings and you have sibling rivalries that they carry over into the group thing. So yes, we would every day would be an argument, which you know, everyone in the band would be scared that we were going to beat each other up, but it just created more friction, which became creative, actually, thankfully.
Right.
But it was, yeah, it's not easy working with brothers. With my brother Ray, it was a lot easier. And unfortunately, you know, and in fact, when Phil left the band, which is his choice because he had to do that after the Octopus album, because he had a family and I understood what he had to do, it was a kind of easier situation for all of us in certain respects, that the band was much more focused in that respect.
Of course, you know, the first couple of albums, Martin Smith was the drummer who passed away in 1997. Fantastic drummer.
Great drummer.
A little too
jazzy for what the band was looking for, and
right,
we decided to move away from him and to find another. We were certainly, you know, a rock band. That's what we were. I mean, we were progressive or whatever, experimental. But we were a rock band, and we wanted to have that sort of rock foundation. So we kind of looked for that after Mark left. And one album, we had Malcolm Mortimer on Three Friends. And Malcolm was a good drummer as well. But we preferred, we recruited John Weathers on Octopus, and he was a founding and a foundation that I guess we were looking for the rest of the band to continue where we wanted to go.
Yeah, exactly. And in the first couple albums as well, you worked with producer Tony Visconti, which had been pretty cool, huh? Working with him?
Yeah, Tony was great. Tony was very important as far as we were concerned. He basically taught the band the art of recording an album, to be honest with you. And he became a member, effectively, of the band. I mean, he was a great musician. He is a great musician.
Mm-hmm.
And respected our musicianship as we did his. And we were kind of a team, and it was a very, very good combination, I think, for all of us.
Another great you know, music guy that we're happy to have still around is Tony Visconti, because he's done a lot of things in the rock and roll era.
Yeah, he was working on Bowie and T-Rex at the same time as Gentle Giant, and we were all in it together at Trident Studios, so we knew each other, and we were kind of, you know, it was a very good era, fantastic era.
You weren't too happy with touring with Black Sabbath, is that true?
personally, we loved them. I mean, they kind of taught us the art of debauchery. The bill itself, it didn't kind of lend itself to a particular fashion. So, you know, the tour, which is one of the very first tours we did in the U.S., was odd because you know, Sabbath had just broken through with Paranoid. We were just, you know, starting out. So when we went on stage, people were saying, get off, and booing us. Ultimately, we were able to fashion our set to win them over. So we were lucky in that respect. We knew how to stand our ground, if you like, and win over an audience. But the Sabbath audience were rabid heavy metal fans. And when we picked up a violin and a cello, the fans were wondering what the hell these instruments were, and for us to get off stage. But we ultimately won them over, except probably the last gig in the tour, which is the L.A. Hollywood Bowl gig, which is probably well known in the respect that during that show we were in the middle of a quiet violin cello, you know, sort of a semi quasi classical piece, and someone decided to throw a cherry bomb on stage.
Really?
And that didn't bode too well for the band. So we stopped playing, and my brother Phil basically cursed the audience out, and the boo that came out was probably one of my classiest and noisiest boos you'll ever hear in the history of music.
Well, just chalk it up to another great rock and roll story, you know.
But we went back the year after and sold out, I think, 8 or 10 nights at the Whiskey. So there you go.
There you go, huh? And of course, you probably played with guys like Jethro Tull and, you know, bands like
Tull were great with us. I mean, we're still very, very good friends with those guys, and they were very, very supportive. And in fact, the tour in Europe and North America, where it was a very important tour for Gentle Giant, because out of that we broke in a lot of countries as headliners in our own right. So that was and they were very forthcoming and very you know, again, helping to help the band do well as we could, because they were fans of our band as well as us being fans of their band.
Yeah. I interviewed both Ian and Martin. Martin was on the radio show. I think I'm going to probably get Ian on the show for his 50th anniversary next year.
Right. Both great friends of ours.
Yeah, good guys.
Absolutely.
One of my every it's funny, because every Gentle Giant fan has a different album that they like. You know, it's not just like one album, which is you know, it's cool, because you guys are, you know, across the board, you know, appealing to everyone. Here's a comment somebody wrote below the below Gentle Giant interview video on YouTube. And I thought it was quite amusing. He said, "I can't find any persons who really like Gentle Giant other than the odd musician geniuses I know from far and wide. We're doomed." I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, is it a comment on sounding like Gentle Giant, you mean?
Yeah. He loves Gentle Giant. He can't understand why. He says all the intricate, you know, type musicians love Gentle Giant. But he says we're doomed because nobody likes that, you know, the Gentle Giant that he knows of. So he says we're doomed.
Well, you know what? Look, I wouldn't say doomed. I think it's more, you know, we were lucky in the fact that we were able to take our music and record it and take it on stage and acquire a very strong fan base that believe it or not, is even stronger in today's marketplace, which is bizarre that we're speaking about Gentle Giant, which basically stopped playing 37 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a very interesting fact that I guess the legacy or whatever we left, I guess is still relevant. I don't know. I guess it is.
Oh, it, you've got a lot of fans out there. I know it. You know, if you go on YouTube, you're going to see lots of comments, great comments, lots of views of all your music. I mean, it's still going on. It, you know, it's like very, you know, I want to say like a cult thing, you know, for lack of a better word, but, you know, it's kind of like the Zappa fans and, you know, that kind of thing. It's like the Captain Beefheart fans. You know, they're devoted forever, you know.
Well, yeah, again, we didn't, I guess the good news, bad news is we didn't try, or we weren't very good at making pop music after our Simon Dupree escapade. We tried to stay away from that. So in that respect, I think we went to the other extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Where we made music that we enjoyed, and hopefully we had fans that will enjoy it too. And I guess that came to pass. So thankfully,
right.
That was it lasted the test of time, I think.
My favorite album is Power and the Glory, and my favorite tune by you singing is Proclamation. I think that's awesome. You do a great job on that track. Love your voice.
Well, thank
in
you
that.
Very much.
Yeah, it's
one of my favorites too.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of high school too, because I was in high school when that album came out, and I listened to it over and over again.
I was in grade school, so you're older than me.
Another beautiful song from that album is Aspirations.
Yeah, that's a very good song.
Excellent song. Is that Carrie who's singing that?
Yeah, Carrie's singing it. It's been covered by some very, very interesting artists, actually. So. That's one of my favorite songs too. Actually, you picked on a couple of my favorites as well.
Great album, I still listen to it over and over again today. And I guess Freehand was your biggest album. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, yes, it was the biggest in North America. We were top 50 and all that stuff, or top 30, God knows what else. But yeah, and that was kind of like the that period of time when. I think the band was at the most creative, mm-hmm. and as well as, you know, we were working a lot. I mean, we toured all over the world a lot. I mean, we didn't stop. The one thing about Gentle Giant, if you like, was that we were workaholics, I guess. We weren't recording. We were playing. In fact, the stage show was always different to the album. So the album was effectively a sketch. For the stage show, which was basically the painting, if you like. So we used the music from the albums as a kind of like a grounding to expand what we did on a live basis.
Right.
So
it's so interesting how things have changed. You know, back then, you know, you went to the concert and the band would introduce their album at a concert, and the concert prices were cheap. I remember the standard price was like $6.50, $5.50, and $4.50. For a concert, and sometimes you see three acts on the same bill, and then
right.
You would go there to buy the album, you know. And now, you know, you go to a concert, $100 for a DVD.
I know. It was a different era, and again, a different time when music was when music was important, more important to the culture than it is
right.
today.
It's a perfect statement. It was more important than it is today. I agree with you 100%. The other album I like was actually Civilian, you know, the 1980 album, which I thought was great. If I was in top 40, I was in top 40 back then, I would have definitely had that on my playlist if I was, you know, able to.
Funny enough, it's one of my favorites. And I'm a very much minority, although that was a kind of moving into the next decade of what the musicality was going to be. But I think this is a very undersung album. And in fact, that's an album which I think the fans of the band, that's the only album we don't have the access to. But I'm working on that to get that back into our fold and show the fans of the earlier stuff that Civilian is an album that is worthwhile for sure.
Oh, it's a great album. Are you going to re-release that album, you think?
We will.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
Incredible album. I really enjoyed it. I think a lot of people are rediscovering that album as well.
Yeah, it is. I think you're right. I just listened to it myself last week, and I don't mm-hmm. sit there like, you know, Sunset Boulevard and listen and you know, and listen to what we did back in the day, but I just did it for the sake of it. And I really enjoyed it myself. It's different to Octopus, but it's a good difference. We try to be different across the board mm-hmm. with every piece of music we try to do. So it was a different album to Freehand and an Interview and Missing Piece, but I think it was a good difference.
It was a very, very, very well-produced album as well, I thought.
Well, you know, yes, Jeff Emmerich, who was our friend yeah. you know, from back in the day in the old EMI days, he was an engineer, and Jeff is spectacular. Actually, Jeff, that's an interesting little sidebar, was Jeff Emmerich produced our very, very first single, S. Simon Dupree and the Big Sound.
Really?
And produced our last album, A Civilian.
First and last, huh? That's ironic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Very. And, you know, I just thought of that just this very second.
Derek, I know we're winding down. Here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some very interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, kind of like the movie Field of Dreams, where you get to wish anything you want, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Wow. How many choices do I get?
How about three?
Okay, let me think here. Certainly Zappa.
Zappa?
You know, Zappa
okay.
was, yeah, Frank Zappa. We did, well, we performed in Frank Zappa, so I don't know if that's a good answer.
That's fine,
we actually
that's
did
okay.
some shows.
Sure.
Yeah, we just did shows of Zappa and Crimson as mm-hmm. a tour.
Right.
I think Charlie Parker.
Charlie Parker, yeah.
Tchaikovsky.
Yep, there you go.
And the Beatles.
And the Beatles. Everybody mentions the Beatles.
So there's my three.
There you go. Good choice. Have you met any of the Beatles?
Absolutely. We recorded in the same studio at the same time.
Really? What year was
in
that?
In fact, 90s, when we did our first single, we were recording at Abbey Road, of course, and so did the Beatles. And we were, yeah, we saw them fairly often. In fact, my brother Phil is a side. You want a little story mm-hmm. that when John and Yoko were doing their bed in,
right?
They had the bed certainly in Abbey Road, and we were in the studio right after they did their session. And my brother Phil, we were kind of like a little sardonic, if you like, and kind of made fun of it. And he started trampolining on their bed. And John and Yoko came in, said, "Get the hell out of here!"
So, really? You
know, hell yeah, yeah. So we trailed out with our tails between our legs.
Oh jeez. Good story.
So yes, the Beatles were always, but certainly they were influential on all the bands.
A lot of people say that Sgt. Pepper's was probably one of the first progressive rock albums of its time.
And they're correct. It certainly was.
Yeah, yeah. I used to never think about that in that way, but yeah, it does make sense.
Yeah.
Derek, what's next for Derek Shulman? What are you going to do next? Besides bring in new bands and work on on all the
well, I think that you said that. I think that's really where, you know, where I'm at. I'm still involved in working with new bands and older bands, and you know, and there'll be some more hopefully remixes in the future of some other things we have in the vault, and you know, things that are Gentle Giant related and non-Gentle Giant related. I just love music and being around musicians, so this is my life, and it has been for since I was born. My father was a professional musician, and when I say when my last breath is taken, I think, you know, it's going to be a musical one, I hope.
Derek, thank you so much for being on the show today. For all the great music you've given us and for everything you do in the music industry, we really appreciate it. It's been wonderful talking to you today.
Yeah, you meet for me, you too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Derek. Take care.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Look for the upcoming Gentle Giant 3-piece suit or suite release on CD, Blu-ray, and vinyl, available on September 29th on Soul Food Music. Pre-order links for Amazon and iTunes. are linked, and you can go right to this link and pre-order the album on different venues. https://link.2/gentlegiant_3-piece-suite. It's an excellent, excellent album, and I guarantee it, you're going to love it. Very special thanks to Ann Layton of Ann Layton Media, Music, Services, Motivation for arranging this interview, and to Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget, purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to Be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.